Okay, Daniel, we're recording.
All right, wonderful. Thanks, Brenda. Yes. And good afternoon from the East Coast to all of you who are joining us today. My name is Daniel Spies, as Brenda said, and I work for Hospice of the Panhandle, which is in the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia. And today's topic is on commemorative events. Now, for those of you that are part of the NSHIP mailing list, which I assume all of you are because you are here, I did send out on Monday an email with the questions that I'd like to touch on today. And so if you happen to have missed that, let me just touch on them real quickly so you can kind of be thinking about them. And hopefully what this will do is facilitate a little bit more conversation. But there are four questions that I want to touch on today. The first of which is I'm going to ask people here in a little bit to be able to describe an event that your agency has had success with and what has made that event successful. Because one of the things that we know is different agencies can try very similar events and have very different results. And so sometimes hearing what are those variables that help maybe one program be successful in one location and not be successful in another can be helpful for people that are contemplating doing something similar. Another question that I'm going to want to ask later is if there are special events that you've tried for specific populations and have they been successful or unsuccessful. So what we're thinking about here really are more unique type programs, maybe a commemorative event for pet loss, for instance, or something geared towards perhaps first generation Americans or the deaf population, prenatal loss, something that's not maybe more of the more, I don't want to say common, but I'll use that word, losses that we experience. Also, you know, I am mindful that there are those of us that are here today whose hospices may only provide service to their hospice community or limited access to the community at large if someone died outside of your care. So I realize that there's probably differences here in the demographics that we serve. So I'd still like to, you know, touch on that. I'd also like to ask people to be able to describe an event that you've tried and failed and why you think that event failed. Because I can tell you in my own experience here with my agency, we've tried a number of events that have failed and that we ultimately scrapped the idea. It sounded like a great idea, but we just could never get it off the ground. And I think sometimes we learn more from our failures than our successes. So I'd like to be able to touch on that. And then lastly, are there events that you've considered doing but then decided against? And then why? You know, one of the things that we've done in our agency is we have decided against doing children's camps. And I know that's very popular among different programs. And so I'm certainly happy to talk about why we came to that decision. But then for the rest of you, what events maybe have you considered and decided against doing and why? So before we get into the actual discussion part, let me just lead off with a few thoughts here. So we're talking about commemorative events. And in general, a commemorative event, you know, can be really just about anything that helps us to memorialize, honor, or remember our loved ones. You know, these are specific activities with remembrance in mind. And I think the most important thing about a commemorative event is that it should be something that's meaningful to the participants. And with that said, these events don't have to be large and grand. I know sometimes you know, there's this idea that, well, we need to have this memorial service, we need to have these printed programs, and we need to have, you know, maybe, you know, professional musicians, you know, like hire an organist or something, or but it doesn't have to be that grand. You know, it can be something that's very small and very intimate, which is also really nice because the small and intimate can certainly save both time, money, and other resources when many of us, most of us, I would say, you know, work with limited budgets. It's not about the size. It's about the meaningfulness of the people that that are participating in this event. And with that said, you can have a commemorative event that focuses around one specific person. And a really good example of that would be leading an event for a family or a group of people that are mourning the same individual. I think of an event that I did once. It really was impromptu. I was supposed to go down to a local business. There was a university here that one of the young members in the support staff had just died suddenly, and so the HR department had called our department and had asked if maybe we could come down and because it was so sudden, maybe do a little bit of debriefing with some of this employee's friends. And sure, certainly happy to come down and do that. And I went down. I happened to grab one of the social work interns who were with us at the time. I said, "Come on, this will be fun. You know, good experience." And we went down. And what ended up happening is one or two people came in, and then three or four, and then 9 or 10, then 20, 25, and all of a sudden, this little debriefing became this huge attended event. There were between 30 and 40 people that filed into this room. It was really big, and I suddenly realized I've got a different, I've got something else on my hands. And so very quickly, I kind of shifted gears, and I started with some opening thoughts and a couple opening statements. And then I threw out some reflective questions to the group to get them to talk about this individual. And really, I followed the lead of the group in offering an insight or helping to shift directions when that needed to happen. But really, the group itself turned what was billed as a debriefing truly into a commemorative event for this person as we talked about his life, what he taught them, how their lives will now be different moving forward as a result of him, and how they will continue to remember him as they move forward. And it really, I mean, there was nothing behind that in terms of resources. It was me and my time in this and the space with the people there, and that became an impromptu commemorative event for this individual. So again, you know, it doesn't have to be big and elaborate. It can be small, simple, and intimate. But commemorative events can also be more general to accommodate for a wider array of people who are mourning their own loss. I think when we think of commemorative events, maybe this is what comes to mind perhaps, more often having some sort of memorial service where there's a, you know, there's some speakers that offer some thoughts. Maybe there's some sort of ritual, a candle lighting or a butterfly release, you know, putting names someplace, reading out names, and then, you know, moment of silence. You know, that kind of more ritualized, formalized commemorative event. And certainly that falls into the category as well. Commemorative events really are, I mean, that's really a large umbrella term. And a lot of things can fall under that umbrella. I think, again, as long as it's getting at the essence of some sort of activity that's designed to memorialize, honor, or remember a loved one. So as we're thinking about memorial events and commemorative events, I think one of the things that is important for us to also keep in mind is what is the goal behind this event? So meaning, what is it that you're hoping the event will do? What need are we seeking to meet? Sometimes we have really good intentions and we design a memorial event. Sometimes it's a workshop. Sometimes it's a support group. Sometimes it's a particular form of outreach. But commemorative events are also fall into this as well. But we will come up with an idea that says, oh yeah, I think this sounds really good. I think this will go over well. But we have to ask ourselves, who are we reaching out to? What is the need here that we're going to meet? Are we going to meet a need, or is it just a really good idea that is simply that? It's a good idea, but isn't necessarily something that's going to be utilized. I can tell you again from my own experience here and I am the program coordinator at my hospice, you know, we've had lots of good ideas over the years that we have launched, and we thought that they would go, but you know, in hindsight, you know, there were things that we didn't think about that contributed, I think, to the failure of those particular events. So another thing that on commemorative events, and this is something that I think for some people can feel kind of a little less in touch with the feel-good clinical side. But I want to talk for just a moment about how commemorative events can actually work to gain you and your agency some positive press out in the community. You know, certainly for those of us that are clinicians, you know, I don't think many of us went into this field with the idea of being good at marketing and publicity. And sometimes it can feel kind of icky to think about, well, I'm going to do this event and this is really going to be great for marketing. This might drive up our census. This might bring people to us. And sometimes that can feel a little underhanded and not sit well entirely with us. But what I want to touch on is really that if you're doing a commemorative event that gets positive press for your agency, that in and of itself is not a bad thing. Because without people, and that's our mission really, is serving people. And without those people to serve, what are we doing? We have to draw attention to what it is that we do to be able to serve the people that we want to serve. But us doing commemorative events, I think, also does another thing, that it presents our hospice agencies in a light that it shows we're not just focused on death and dying, but that also healing and growth after a loss. You know, I've talked to so many people that have said, oh, I didn't realize your hospice did this. I thought you just served people who were dying, which is certainly not the case. And that was very nice for that person to be able to make that connection, to utilize our service. And we do happen to serve a lot of community clients. So these are people that have come to us and had no experience with our patient care services. Commemorative events are also a very easy, in terms of non-intrusive way, for others in the community to learn of your agency's bereavement services who may not be aware of the full scope of your bereavement services. You know, they may not even know that your hospice offers bereavement care. And a commemorative event, which can be very non-threatening for people, can be an easy way in for somebody to say, okay, well, what else? Okay, so this I'm here this event, but what else is it that you offer? And dovetailing with that, it also creates a nice way for somebody to access and learn more about your patient care services. So learning more about the bereavement services, learning more about the patient care services. And again, ultimately, all of this comes back to serving people, which really is what we're here to do. So I just wanted to touch on those thoughts and comments before I kind of opened up the floor to our discussion topics today. So let me go ahead and just throw that question out there and ask you guys about any events that your agency has had success with and what you think, you know, what's made that successful. You know, probably something that you've done more than once. So let me just go and open the floor and invite some participation here.
Remember, you might need to hit star and 6 in order to speak so we can hear you.
Hello, this is
Hello.
Suzy.
Hello, we can hear you, yes.
Okay, great. Our Visiting Nurse Hospice Care in Santa Barbara does a beautiful Angels Among Us event at Christmas every year.
Wow.
And my colleague is crucial in getting this done. And so it's open to the community as well as all hospice survivors. An angel is given to each person as they enter, and then during the remembrance time, when pictures of the people who have passed on are flashed on the screen, each one can go up and hang that angel on the tree. There's beautiful music. Sometimes, because we have a veterans program too, this last year we had the ROTC folks come lead us in the pledge, and then they showed how they do remembrance. It's very nice.
That sounds wonderful.
How do people, do they, you said that you show pictures. Do they make contact with you beforehand, or how does all of that work?
Right. So we, in our mailings, there's a special mailing for this, and so there's a request. If you would like your loved one shown, please send a digital copy of your photo to us at this address, and you know, an email address, and then somebody very nicely. We have a wonderful IT department, and so people put that together for us. And the names then for all of the bereaved are read by different bereavement counselors during this time. But, you know, not all the bereaved have pictures up there, but the pictures are rotated. And I happened to be sitting next to a son this Christmas, and he was so moved and teary as he saw his mother and said, "I'll be back next year." It's really our volunteers cook, you know, bake cookies and things, so there's a little refreshment time afterwards. But it's one of our doctors speaks about the experience of being a physician. One of our bereavement counselors speaks about her own bereavement experience and the experience of doing this work, and it's really quite lovely. I'm sorry that it's sounding real braggy, but it works really well.
Great. How many people attend, just out of curiosity?
It's over 100.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm not sure.
Great.
I'm not sure what the number is.
Wonderful.
How about others? Other events that your hospice may do.
Well, Danielle, I'll share one. This is Brenda from Indianapolis, but I have I have one that's an example of where it was successful in one community in Oklahoma and then not successful thus far here in Indianapolis because I've switched cultures and different places. So one event that I chose to do was movie and a pitch-in or a potluck, depending on your area of the country, for Valentine's Day. And so to give, and the goal behind it was thinking that people who are heartbroken might be having a difficult time on that evening, and to give them an alternate place to go to be together where it was understood what they were experiencing. And so the movie choice was always really quite interesting to try to think about the goals of that movie. So the movie selection was always very particular. They were given a little kind of takeaway. I had a little mailbox there where they could send a Valentine to their loved one if they wanted to. I had it decorated really beautifully, but not over the top like Valentine's Day-ish, but it was still just welcoming and, you know, it was commemorative of remembering love and being loved today, and you know, that kind of thing. So in Oklahoma, it was quite successful. Actually, I would have, you know, for the small town that I was in, 30 probably or so folks would come every year, and it became kind of a ritual of the community, mm-hmm. so to speak, so that people would return year after year to come to that event. And they also then it went on to be more of a social group, those people who kind of met each other, and so they would do other events during the year on their own that wasn't part of the Grief Center. And then here in Indianapolis, though, let's see, I did it for 3 years in a row, and each time it was just very small. So it was a lot of resources, energy, time, and that sort of thing. But I do think that now in my larger city, you know, we're over 1 million people in my metropolitan area, that I think it takes longer for something to kind of catch on, so to speak. So I think we probably should have just stuck with it for a while. It was the marketing of it was really, I think, pretty spectacular. You know, we helped broken hearts, and it was really kind of a really beautiful image of a heart. And I just think, you know, our attention there was so good. But this year we decided not to do it. We bypassed it. But as you can tell, I'm not ready to let it go altogether. But so it was successful in one area and not successful in the other. It was a great commemorative event for Valentine's Day. So,
oh, wonderful. Brenda, and if I could, and I'm going to ask the gallery's forgiveness on this, but I just want to throw out here off topic just a bit that here where I'm located, we've got a horrendous thunderstorm bearing down on us, and our power is flickering. So if I happen to get lost, I will try to call back in. So
okay.
if things go down, I just wanted to give you that heads up as I'm sitting here with lights flickering.
Thanks, Daniel. We have a participant in Florida that was experiencing the same thing.
I wanted to ask you, Brenda, particularly about the program that you were just discussing.
Mm-hmm.
It sounded like it was more social focused than it was like having a thematic message and discussion. Is
correct.
Was I hearing you right? Okay.
That's right. I mean, there were elements of remembrance in it, you know, like the Valentine's Day to your loved one, you know, the Valentine that you could create and send. And then the little takeaway as well would have been, you know, of remembrance that, you know, how many Valentine's Day did I have with my husband or my wife or my partner, and now I don't have them today. So there were therapeutic elements in it, but otherwise just, I think, being together. And then the movie itself, I aimed for it to be therapeutic in terms of being distracting and uplifting of your spirit and that kind of thing, but not, you know, so that was tricky. The movie was the trickiest part.
mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and you know, and the reason I asked about that question is, you know, having a commemorative event, you know, can certainly have the feel of, oh, it's some sort of very formal event where, you know, where there's a message and a speaker and we're all sitting politely and listening.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be. And I think about our own Mother's Day activity. We have, and we've had it, it's a Mother's Day brunch.
Mm-hmm.
But we do limit it to only women. So women who have lost their mothers. And that usually includes a brief speaker. It includes a brunch, and it includes some sort of then memorial craft or other activity. So there is a little bit of discussion, but then it's mostly socializing and talking and doing together as a group of women. And ironically, I mean, that has gone well, but we've never been able to get anything equivalent for fathers off of the ground either, you know. Yeah, so.
Interesting.
Yeah. So does anybody else have some sort of event that you've had good success with at your agency and those sorts of things that you maybe think have helped contributed to that success?
Oh, hello.
This is Susie again from Santa
Hi.
Barbara. And when I was in Redding, California, I did not attend. I wasn't in hospice at that point. But there's a beautiful river bridge in Redding, and the hospice would have a candlelight vigil. People hold, you know, across the river holding candles. That was quite beautiful and lovely.
Uh-oh, did we lose Daniel? Daniel?
No,
really
I'm here.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm here. I
heard that strange noise, and it's like, uh-oh, he's gone.
Yeah, no, I may have cut out.
That's okay. That sounds really beautiful. Were the candles floated in the water, or were they just standing on the bridge?
They were held by the participants. So this is a walking, it's called the Sundial Bridge in Reading that was designed by the Spanish architect. And so it's a pedestrian bridge, and people walked across the bridge holding candles. And I happened to be there doing my walk the next morning, and men were down with putty knives cleaning up the wax. So I suspect, some cones or whatever around the candles to help catch wax would have been helpful. But the photos were beautiful.
Wonderful.
Wow. Nice. Anybody else have anything you'd like to share?
I would like to share something.
Sure.
Okay. This is Ellen from Regional Hospice and Home Care in Connecticut. And in our children's bereavement program, which is open to not only our hospice families but the community at large, each year we offer what we call a memory meal, where each family can plan together to bring a favorite dish or beverage of their deceased loved one. And it's shared that evening with the group. And, they're also invited to share, an anecdotal story around the dish or maybe their loved one, a certain way that the person may have made the dish, or it could even be, we had a family bring, a case of Pepsi, that was that was his favorite, his favorite beverage. But and the kids got involved in the whole process of it, and many times the family would actually cook it together, whatever it may be, with the children involved and bring it. And so it was a very proud moment for the kids to be able to share this this meal with other members of the group.
Hmm. Nice. Very nice. And what a great way of bringing people together than with food.
Absolutely. It's absolutely correct. And and it's been very successful that we've done it every year.
Neat. Anybody else would like to talk about something? A program that your agency's done successfully?
Daniel, we do kind of the same thing with the memory meal, only I do it during a parent loss group. And so that's kind of our final night. It's kind of a pitch-in type kind of idea for our final group. And would they bring a dish or something that was from their mother or their father? It's kind of similar. So it works for adults as well,
mm-hmm.
quite well.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that we do, I mentioned the Mother's Day program that we do that's always been very successful. But we also do something around the holidays called Light Up a Life, where, and this isn't done by my department, it's actually done by the entire agency, and it's a little bit large, but we place trees in very public locations in the four different counties that we serve. And then we have a service of sorts where we light up the trees and we talk in general about the people that we've lost, and people were able to come up and put names on the tree. And we have staff there. We have some of our chaplains there, some of our grief counselors there, so that people have opportunity to connect with that staff as well. That's always been very successful, and we've got some people that come back on a regular basis to that event, and then the trees stay up through the holiday season, we pretty much market that we advertise that this is going to come internally to the people that we send out, because we have a quarterly newsletter that goes out to lots and lots and lots of people, not just people that have been served by our program, but have gotten onto our mailing list through a number of different ways. And so that information goes out. And I think just that broad reach and having done it successfully over the years has created a base of people that have come to expect that. And so it's a little bit easier to build off of something that's had success, I think, than sometimes to launch something new. I think sometimes we have to, when we have a good idea and something that has some, a little bit of success, I think sometimes continuing to stick with it is sometimes important. It's some in getting something off of the ground long term. All right, well, let me then continue and ask if there are special events that you and your agency have tried for specific populations and whether they've been successful or unsuccessful. Okay, so this is, and I mentioned things like pet loss, prenatal loss, or working with specific groups of people, you know.
Hi, you know, one thing that really comes to mind is this is Ellen again from Healing Hearts Regional Hospice. We have tried in the past to form a group for young adults who've lost a loved one. And we just find it so hard, and I guess it's a good thing, but I know there's a need out there, and it just seems hard to get them to come.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, I'm sure there's things, you know, they have college, they have jobs, but, yeah, we've struggled with that, and we do believe there is a need there. I don't know if anyone else has had the same, you know, situation.
Yeah.
I know I've always wondered if we tried it on, because I've grappled with that much as well, too. It's a kind of an age, developmental age that's close to my heart. So I have always thought, though, because I have not been successful either, that one of two things, I think that they are living online a lot right now, so that we need to, you know, shift our thinking to reaching them online. But the second thought I had was partnering with a college and seeing how that might work as well, too, and I just haven't had the time myself to go in that direction. But that was going to be my next kind of direction for that population, if I get the opportunity to partner with a college and see what we might develop there.
That's great, yeah, and that's something that we have looked at is at one of our local state universities here, and there it seems like the counseling department's very interested in something like that. So we'll see if what kind of attendance we get. Thank you.
That's wonderful.
This is Susie again from Santa Barbara, and I just want you to, that with the recent shootings in Isla Vista, we were all counselors were on call to go help and had taken shifts and all of that. And the state legal department said we could not. They wouldn't allow us to. So there may be, because I guess, you know, if something happened, if one of us tripped on a doorstop or something, then they would be liable. I have no idea what it is, but it is a little bit more involved, I guess, than good-hearted people getting together.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
I wanted to tell you a little about how we end groups here, because I love the meal. We have, for loss of a parent and loss of a spouse, both of these, we have a ritual at the end where folks are invited to write a letter to their loved ones and bring it to the last group, bring a photo to the last group, light a candle by the photo, and share their memories and their love with the group.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And again, I think that's a perfect example that you're embedding that event within something else. You know, perfect example of how, you know, the commemorative events don't have to be grand and large and expensive to be meaningful. You know, they can be very simple and intimate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we sort of do something like that when I run our general loss support group. It's very hard for us where we are in mostly rural West Virginia to have themed support groups. There's not a population base that is easily centralized to join us. So we end up having very mixed groups, and actually we've had a lot of success with that. But one of the things that when I run the group, one of the things that I do is for one of the nights I bring in our music therapist, and she leads a really neat activity where the members of the group are given this special type of rice paper on which they are invited to write a couple words to their loved one. They can write any maybe regrets or misgivings that they've been holding on to. Anything that they want to put on the paper, they're invited to put onto the paper. Anything they want to release or anything they want to send off symbolically to their loved one. And then she performs a song and then talks about the lyrics with them and processes that with them. And in the process of doing that, that whole little bit, members are invited to come up as they feel inclined to do so and put the paper into a large pool of water, and it dissolves.
Oh, wow.
And the markers that people are given to write on the paper with then begin to color the water. And so you end up having a bowl of water, sometimes with really cool colors, sometimes it's really kind of funky when you get a bunch of weird colors together. But there's so much symbolism there, and it's just such a powerful piece of that group. And again, this is just a little event that is embedded in one of our 8-week support groups. So I wanted to just kind of come back to the question of specific populations or and see if there was anybody else that had anything that you'd like to share on that. Anything that you guys have tried?
Well, we try. This is Brenda again in Indianapolis. We do a Mother's Day tea, so similar to your brunch. And I know Patty Ann Walt and her large program is where I borrowed the idea from forever ago. She actually hosts hers at a large hotel. It has sponsors. It's a huge event, like, 150, 200 women attend that event. So it's hers is really large and wonderful. She did a small presentation on it at the virtual bereavement conference that we had in the fall. So you can see some really great pictures from Patty. And she's often on our website, on our listserv, on our chats, that we do there. So if you ever were interested in talking to her about hers, she'd be happy to share that with you. But so I borrowed that from hers, only ours is much smaller scale. So we have a sponsor that sponsors a princess tea from a local tea room. So they actually literally cater it and bring it in, and it's the tea, with all the fancy little finger sandwiches and the teacups, and I mean the whole nine yards. It's like so nice. We have like 15 women is what we have to limit it to because it's kind of pricey, but it's still really, it's so small and so intimate and so personal that it's really wonderful. The women really get to know one another and really spend, a couple of hours of good quality time, and we make a scrapbook page. So before we ask the women to bring a photo and objects for the sacred space so that that's where they introduce their mother to the rest of the group and talk about her and their memories. And then also a special photo that they don't mind gluing and cutting and that kind of thing. And they make a scrapbook page to take with them to start a commemorative book of their own or to frame it and hang it on the wall for the day. So I've done that for about 6 or 7 years now, and it's always really successful, very nice to do.
Mm-hmm.
So well attended.
Yeah. Let me ask this question, because I think sometimes this comes up, is the question about money. Do you do you charge people for programs? Do you not? Are there certain ones that you do and certain ones you don't? And how do you make that distinction? Because, again, if we had unlimited resources, yeah, boy, there's a lot of nice things that we could do with people. But, you know, that's oftentimes not the case. And asking people to, you know, pay a materials fee or something like that, you know, can sometimes be a barrier. So I'm just wondering how, you know, different organizations have dealt with the cost factor. Do you pass any of that on, and how do you make that determination?
This is Susie again in Santa Barbara, and we did this day of caring for any bereaved in the community and in our program, and, you know, everything from art therapy to music therapy to Reiki and Tai Chi, and all of those folks volunteered their time, our experts, but we provided lunch and then some materials, and so I think our charge was $25. Mm-hmm. But in the advertisement, it was scholarships are available because we didn't want to turn anyone away.
Okay.
If payment was not. And, you know, we went to our boss and said, you know, we think we're going to be able to do this and not cost any money out of our budget, but in case, you know, and we got an okay. Mm-hmm. That if we were, you know, if it cost us $40 or $60, that would be all right. In fact, I think she gave us $100. We were even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know for us that all of the programs that we launch free of charge. So mm-hmm. when we are considering doing different activities. We've come back to that question many times. Do we charge people? Do we not charge people? And we've ultimately decided not to have a fee associated with any of our activities. But then that certainly affects what we're able to do. And there are certainly programs that we have elected not to do because if we tried them, if we put the money up front out, to put them on, and we did not have enough registrations or too few registrations, then we've invested a lot of money in something, and we've not really touched a lot of people. So it has been a barrier for us. Any others? Okay. So the next question that I want to ask, I'm really curious to hear some feedback on, and that's what kind of, can you guys describe any events that you have tried and failed, and why do you think that program may have failed? Because, again, I think we learn a lot from, you know, mistakes that we make, particularly if any of us are considering doing something similar. Sometimes it's nice to know what others have tried and, you know, what they learned from the experience.
I know, Daniel, I had a bereaved whose son died, and she had gathered a large group of people on the year anniversary and had tried the lanterns, the Japanese, the floating lanterns.
Yes.
And then when I was making a follow-up phone call, you know, a month later or so, she said that was absolutely disastrous. So that I've always been too chicken to try those. But people have said you have to be very careful with the wind, and they kind of go up in flames sometimes and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I just kind of wondered if other people had tried the floating lanterns. They look so beautiful, you know, like the pictures when a large event has happened, but I think they sound kind of dangerous
mm-hmm.
or tricky.
Yeah. Yeah, has anybody used those? Any experience with those?
No, okay. And I've also heard with the butterflies as well, too, you know, people have all different kinds of feelings about using live butterflies, but, you know, they come to us kind of asleep, because they're kept at a lower temperature and they wake up as they warm up, and some wake up and some don't, though. And so that was a bit traumatizing, I heard from some other bereavement program coordinator folks, that they did it with children, and the children were a bit traumatized because some of the butterflies didn't wake up. So just to have that warning out there. I've never used butterflies, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier we had tried doing something for Father's Day, and we've never been able to get that off the ground. We've tried to do something just for dudes who've lost their dads, and we've tried to mix it up so we didn't restrict it to just men, but open it up to anybody, and we market it in the same way that we market our other events, and just no interest. We offered it a couple times, and just no interest. No interest. People aren't even calling to ask about it. So, so that one really has our, has us scratching our heads. I don't know if other people have experience successfully with doing stuff for dads and moms on Father's Day and Mother's Day, but we've never been successful.
Hi, this is Phil from Community Hospice in Washington, D.C. and Maryland.
Oh, hi, Phil.
Hi. We've actually, in years past, I've done a couple of different programs where we offered experiences for those who had lost loved ones in a group aimed specifically at men. We tried one at Father's Day, one not at Father's Day, and it was interesting. One of the groups formed very, very quickly. It was a Saturday morning only kind of event, and we had about 12 participants, men only, for about 2.5-3 hours, and great communication, great discussion. We tried a very similar event a few weeks later near Father's Day in another location, and this had absolutely no response.
Wow.
And I don't know if it was the fact that we offered it near Father's Day or the location, but again, it was on a Saturday morning, so the time was very similar, but just zero response that time. So we've had both experiences.
Well, and that's funny you say about the Saturday morning, because we last year tried to run for the first time kind of a drop-in group and start trying to use that. And nothing. I think during the entire year we had maybe two or three different people showed up to the drop-in group, and not all at the same time. It was usually the counselor and the one person that showed up. So trying to get people to come out on Saturday mornings was never successful for us. How about others? Things that you've tried and not had success with, and any maybe insight to why you think it may have failed.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes. Hello.
So this is Cheryl from Healing Hearts again. We've never had success with our Mother's Day or Father's Day program, which we tend to hold a weekday evening, and we've had minimal success with Mother's Day. We just sort of bill it as a support group. You know, what's it like to, experience Mother's Day without your mom, and we open it up to both sexes. And we've had maybe a couple of people, as the years go by. We've never had a Father's Day response. And so this year we tried to combine it, sort of Mother's Day or Father's Day, and we also had no interest. So, I kind of like the idea of a brunch and food on a Saturday or Sunday morning. That might work. So maybe we'll try that next year. But we struggled with that over the years for sure.
Yeah, we did 11 o'clock, and it's interesting, the women come kind of dressed for tea, and some wore their bonnets this year, like their tea hats. It was really lovely.
Yeah.
That was an advertiser. It was not a hat on the advertisement for it or anything, but I just thought it was so cool that they came like that. It was really beautiful.
Yeah, and I wonder if, for us, the Mother's Day brunch that I told you that we do, is the one activity that we've had success with on a Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Ours is on Saturday as well.
Yeah, the Saturday before Mother's Day. But, anything else that we've tried on Saturday has failed. And I think what can be so frustrating, it's been my experience as a program coordinator, is trying to make sense of why this failed and why this succeeded.
True.
And sometimes it's guesswork, you know. And I know for us here locally, our kind of go-to explanation is, well, this is largely a rural community with a couple pockets of centralized population. So that's, you know, but sometimes it feels like, gosh, that seems so reductionistic and simplistic, but we've really got nothing else when we're, you know, when we're trying to advertise in the same way. You know, and it may come back to, you know, the question or the thought that I shared earlier, which is the thought of need. You know, we think that this would be useful, that this would be helpful, that this would be nice, but there simply may not be the need, or the people that have the need, we're not reaching for whatever reason. And knowing which is, you know, again, also hard to know, but maybe asking some of those questions, if it's something that that you're particularly passionate about, you know, figuring out, you know, doing some kind of needs assessment to find out if indeed there is a need for that type of support and how you can get that information in the hands of the people that are most likely going to want it.
I have kind of a follow-up question to that. One of the things that we've noticed over the last decade is that it used to be we had a special kind of coping with the holidays group to sort of give people sustenance to, you know, and tools to make it through the holidays. And mm-hmm. it was well attended, and over time it has dwindled to fewer than five. So mm-hmm. I'm wondering if anybody else has experienced that.
Hmm. I know for us, we do a coping with grief at the holidays workshop, and we offer several sessions both in the afternoon and in the evening, trying to be as available. But we do it in a workshop style, so that even if we only have a couple people, that's okay, because typically the way we differentiate workshop from support group is workshop is mostly us talking, support group
right.
is mostly you talking.
Right, and that's what we do. It is a workshop, but what I'm noticing is that it used to be sort of a really big deal, and I mean I remember leading one of these at a hospital I worked at like 30 years ago, and it was packed, and mm-hmm. So I don't know if the need has dissipated, if there's something else with media and whatnot that's making a difference, or people mm-hmm. are just busy, or I just wondered if you had any thoughts about that.
Yeah. Anybody want to chime in there?
Well, we offer, you know, the workshop as well, and I want to say it seems about the same every year to me in the different places that I've done it, you know, several different states and different kinds of rural versus city kind of places that I have not ever in all these years been able to figure out a rhyme or reason to the attendance level. So
okay.
that I do know that daytime and evening time is important, and it seems to me right now for the last couple of years, offering that workshop prior to Thanksgiving has been successful. But then I've had other years where offering it in between Thanksgiving and Christmas as well has also been more successful than the other ones, but just offering a number of them. And I know Patty also planted this idea a long time ago. They actually start theirs like in October and just kind of hit or miss for several months and just being willing to have people come when they need to come. So we do about six of them throughout the season.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so not just one. I think when we do just one, I don't know, you know. But when we did two, when I first moved to Indianapolis, we offered two one day and one evening. Both of them had about 30 participants each, so that was pretty big.
Hi, this is Phil again from Community Hospice in D.C. I'm fairly new to this particular hospice, but at a previous hospice and again in this hospice, I've done those kind of events. And years past, many years past, we did them at the hospice location, offering them at different times, and had pretty good attendance and made them into a pretty elaborate evening or afternoon of events and programming with lots of special events and some special ways to honor the deceased loved ones and some takeaways that folks could take with them and nice things like that. Those worked pretty well and seemed to be successful in that area. In my current position where I am now, last year we did these for the first time in the community, but we did them in the community. We did not offer any of them here within our own walls.
Right.
We went out to local, actually funeral homes, church groups, senior citizen groups, and senior centers, and across the areas that we serve, and had pretty good attendance overall. There was no one huge group. Probably the biggest sense we had at any one setting was maybe 12. But we did have a number of opportunities to do these in the community, and that seemed to be very welcomed. And again, going back to an earlier question, we did not charge for this, of course. And the folks that that agreed to host were very pleased that we came at no charge to them, offering what they thought was a very valuable service.
Great.
Yeah. Again, just a perfect example of something simple that, that can be done that's still meaningful. We are just about out of time. I've got just a couple more minutes, but the last question, and I'll just throw out if anybody really had a burning desire to answer this, but have there been any events that you considered but then decided against, and why? No takers on this one? Yeah, I did mention earlier, which is not, you know, children's camp, for instance. We've looked at lots of different programs that we have thought about trying and then decided not to do. And I mentioned children's camp specifically, but a lot of times what it comes down to for us is, unfortunately, it comes down to accessibility and cost. You know, there have been there are definitely people that we would like to be able to reach to be able to offer certain programs. I know we've tried a number of times to do you know, maybe gender specific or loss specific, like we've tried many times with suicide survivors. And it's been difficult to reach enough people in our community to pull them together. So usually one of the guiding questions that we ask is how do we, you know, reach those people, and can we reach those people? But certainly, you know, for us, you know, doing larger stuff, which we try to avoid doing because that, you know, cuts into limited budgets. We try to do as much as we can for as little cost as we can. So that's just a couple things that we use to think about when we're evaluating feasibility of programs and events.
Well, we're gonna be brave, Daniel, and try a pet loss memorial event on a Saturday from 11 to 1. And I'm partnering kind of with a local pet memorial place. And then fortunately, one way you can look at it one way or the other, but we have a local television show that's kind of a syndicated Saturday morning pet television program, and it's just the sweetest program. They do all kinds of great education, and two great personalities, you know, do it. And the mascot for that show just died. Louie was his name, and so she's actually going to come. I know, and she said, well, maybe we could turn this into a TV show and do grief education for, you know, her market that she's syndicated in and that kind of thing. So, but I don't know. It's the first one I've ever done. Watch, you know, one other person come.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I have no idea who will come to this, but, you know, it's been, it's something close to my heart. I'm a true pet lover, and I think it's a very significant loss. It's not very honored. It can be very disenfranchised kind of grief. So I'm going to be brave. I'm going to try it. We're taking it on. I'm going for it.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I want to thank you, Brenda, for being my co-facilitator today, and thank you everybody who came and who chimed in with your thoughts and observations, and for those of you who were just here with us, and soaking in the conversations. We enjoy having you and having these discussions. So our next one will be on the first Wednesday of next month. And Brenda, do you happen to remember off the top of your head what that topic is?
I don't. I apologize. I don't have it with me either. Oops.
And I realized that just as I was saying that I didn't pull up that topic.
Nope. I have my computer closed down at this moment, so can't touch it. But we will be here.
Yes, we will. Well, thank you all so much for joining us, and we'll see you next month and on the list.
Have a great day. Thank you, Daniel.
Right. Thank you, Brenda. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now.